Hi, Vanessa.
Hey, Shannon, how are you, my dear?
Good, how are you?
Awesome. Now that I'm seeing you, I'm even feeling better.
Good. How's the day been?
Oh, busy.
Yeah.
Two sessions before this one. So let's see if the numbers and attendees in this one will top the other two.
Right. This is our last breakout session of the day, huh?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I still haven't connected with our speaker. I know I emailed her back on Monday or Tuesday, but do you know how to pronounce, is it Joanna or Johanna? Do you know?
I have no clue.
Okay, I will ask when she arrives.
Yeah, we can just ask her when she get in.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good. The sessions have been well attended, all the ones I've been at, so that's exciting.
What were your numbers in the previous sessions?
We had 230 or 40 in one of the ones this morning, and then in the upper 100, close to 200 range since then, so it's been good.
Awesome, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's wonderful.
Yep.
That is the way to go.
Exactly.
Let me make you co-host now. Hello, Julie. Do you want to turn on your camera so that I see you? Look at my friend. How are you?
I am good. How are you?
Awesome. As I said to Shannon, now that I'm seeing you, I'm feeling fabulous.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah.
Oh. I wasn't able to attend your presentation.
I'm sorry, what was that?
I wasn't able to attend your presentation. Weren't you one of the presenters?
No, not today. Look at me. I got my hair back. I let it just dry like this today. No. Next Friday.
Oh, next Friday. Okay, I knew you're somewhere.
Yeah, noon.
Yeah. You're always looking good. What you're talking about?
No.
You see your standard.
I've got grubs on today. I wasn't being on camera.
No, you are good. You are.
Hey guys.
Look at Johanna. She is very professional. Wow.
This is serious.
Yeah.
Let's see if I can figure out how to do the normal.
I made you a co-host, Johanna.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, because I probably need co-host to spotlight.
So my calendar, I've got wedding rings on this post. Did you guys?
Me too.
Oh my gosh, that is so funny.
Fun.
I love it.
Wonderful. So what's new, Julie?
We got one more week till break. That's all I know.
Same here.
Oh my gosh. It's so crazy.
Yeah.
It's so crazy. I taught too many classes this semester. It was not the semester.
Wow.
Yeah. Too much.
Oh.
Well, I'm not doing all that next Friday. That looks serious.
I did not see sign up for next week. Okay.
Okay. All right. So are you guys seeing the PowerPoint and me at the same time, hopefully?
Yes. Yes, yes. But you need to take it down because we need to let this other PowerPoint to go. And then when it's your turn, you can share it.
Ah, okay.
Okay. So you can just stop that.
Yep, I can find the controls again.
Yeah, I gave you control, but really not the whole control.
I don't. Oh, there they went. Hang on. Okay.
There we go.
There you go.
Johanna, can I ask how you pronounce your full name?
Johanna Debrecht.
Debrecht. Okay, perfect. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, Banaz, I'm gonna go silent again.
Okay. Oh, I lost mine.
You can't do that yet. Hang on. That won't work. Get out of that, please. Get out of that. Get out of that.
Shannon, can you see my PowerPoint presentation?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. Someone
did something pop up? Of course. Up over here.
That pop-up's not showing up on the shared screen.
I'll sign on with a different one.
Hello from Orange County, California. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. How are you guys?
Awesome. How's your weather there?
It's nice and sunny right now. Yeah, it's pretty cool. 70 degrees. 72
awesome.
Degrees.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
There we go. Very good. Yeah, I guess you can shift it that way a little bit. And think about that.
Hello from West Valley, California. How are you? Houston, Texas, Jennifer. How are you doing, Jennifer? You know that you're all muted. If you want to talk, you need to unmute and mute yourself again. So
so that's I'll still hang out here.
We'll look and see if I left my Nerf gun in that cabinet upstairs in the office. My Nerf gun. It'll either be there or on that little wireframe thing.
Sunny Phoenix. We have sunny day in Atlanta also. We are close to 80 here. Close to 80. Don't know how we are going to get to winter, but well, that's beside the point. So Orlando, welcome. Welcome, Jeanette. All right, we have 4 more minutes. And then we will begin. We are at 70 right now. Northwest Arkansas, Texas. Tampa, Florida. Wow, that must be Virginia Beach. I love Virginia Beach. Northeast Maryland. Orlando, Florida. Yes. Glenview, Illinois.
Find enough places to put everything. It's hard to find enough places to put everything. In 2 more minutes, we will begin. And welcome everyone, those of you who are joining us. We are at 93 now.
I feel a little upset.
All right, I'm going to stop my stop sharing.
Nas, should I go ahead and share now or not?
Not yet. I know you're anxious to start, but.
Yeah.
All righty, we are at 4 o'clock. The session is being recorded. So I want to welcome all of you to the AIMATIC 2020 virtual conference and McGraw-Hill Day. This will be a 45 minute session with time for Q&A. Sisters, there are so many of us here. If you wish to speak, please raise your hand. To do this, open participant panel and look for the hand on the lower left in blue. You can also use the chat box. we will be monitoring the chat box. And I will now turn the meeting over to our presider to introduce the speaker. Enjoy the session.
Thank you, Banaz, and welcome everybody to our last presentation session for today. It's my pleasure to introduce to you our speaker presenting on calculus 1 and 2 models, wedding bells, Nerf guns, and duct tape. Johanna DeBrat began as an adjunct at Tarrant County College, Fort Worth. Later full-time, she began the modular math program for developmental mathematics. As an assistant professor at Northern Virginia Community College, she has enjoyed teaching a variety of classes from developmental mathematics to linear algebra and developing the online courses for calculus. The 2014 Faculty of the Year and 2017 Honors Faculty of the Year, she pioneered the Honors Calculus 1-2 courses on her campus. Now teaching full-time at Red Rocks Community College near Denver, she is involved in equity efforts for underrepresented minorities in STEM fields and increasing programming in STEM courses using Python. She served as the production manager for the Mathematic Educator, Amatic's peer-reviewed journal, from 2015 to 2017, and has served as editor since 2017. Johanna, we look forward to your presentation.
Okay, let me get the screen shared. Okay, so at least in theory, you can now see both the PowerPoint presentation and you can see me as well. So welcome to my basement classroom. This is where I spend almost all my time nowadays. Since the pandemic, we're shut down and it looks like Denver's going back into code red. So we're teetering on the edge. It's not too good out here. So today though, I want to focus on calculus models and how to create calculus models without spending a lot of money. One of the things that we struggle with, especially at the 2-year college level, of course, is budget, right? And right now, I don't know about your colleges, but our colleges are really under the gun because we've lost enrollment because of the pandemic. So asking for, you know, a lot of extra money to go buy a very expensive, very specialized set of equipment, it's probably not gonna happen. So today I just wanna talk about ways to make calculus models without having to break the budget. So we're gonna start today by kind of considering why are we even here today, besides the fact that you're hoping to get some tips on how to do some of this. So my focus today is how can you just take everyday objects, stuff that you encounter in your everyday life, and how can you use those to make some manipulatives and physical three-dimensional models so that your students can better understand what they're doing? And then why does it benefit the students and how does it benefit the students? That's something that I also want to address at least a little bit. And then I'll tell you as we go along where I get my ideas. And the answer to are there available free resources is a resounding yes. There's almost too much. It can be a little overwhelming trying to go through all the different sources. So actually, I mean, I think I have an 18 slide presentation and it's only the first 7 slides that are actually the presentation. So the last part of the entire presentation are links to resources. So I have, all of it is linked at the moment, including the reading list. So if you click on the DOI number at the end and you have a browser window open, it should take you straight to the article if you're interested in it. And I've organized the resource information both by course, and I did include Calculus 3. I decided at the last minute I should add that on. And I've also done it by topic. Now, this is not an exhaustive list. This is just a starting point. This is a place on some of the bigger topics that I know from my years of teaching are a problem for students, all right? Where students get in this case where they're like, I don't get it, all right? I don't understand what you're doing. What are we doing? Why are we doing this? So this is just to get you started and get you thinking about how you can use it. So one of the things that I want to mention today is, how does all of this really benefit the students? Because it does benefit the students. It doesn't just benefit the students who are struggling, though. It benefits all of them. For one thing, my kind of a hobby, at least before the pandemic, now I have no hobbies, I have no life, I just work. But before the pandemic, I had a hobby, and it was looking at neuroscience as it affects the learning and absorption of mathematics, all right? So that was sort of one of my areas just of interest, just how does the way our brain works affect how we learn mathematics? And one of the things that I've learned is that for all people, the more senses, you know, your touch, your sight, your hearing, your smell, even your taste, the more you can involve all the senses in the learning for the students, the more deeply and tightly it is wound into the synapses of the brain, all right? So by giving them a physical model that they can touch and look at and rotate, and some of mine even come apart and then go back together, you're actually creating more pathways to get to the information. Because information that comes in through our eyes, of course, is primarily stored in the occipital lobe, but stuff that comes in from a different sense is stored in a different part of the brain. So you're creating connections that creates a stronger memory, and it's more likely to be retained, all right? So I think this is one of the reasons that these work and work so well is because, again, you're creating a stronger, longer lasting memory. It is also particularly useful for students who have learning disabilities. For them, this ability to get the information hardwired in the brain is super important. And then, of course, it is a part of active learning because they're not just sitting there listening to you. So that's always good. And one of the theories about why it works has to do with this idea of the concrete, representational, abstract part of learning. So there is actually an article at the end. If you're interested in learning more about this, I've connected it. The idea is you go from the concrete, which that is something you can touch and look at or can manipulate. Now, here's the weird thing. It turns out that some of the virtual stuff is just as effective as the concrete models. Because I was super worried when the pandemic happened. I thought, oh my gosh, they're never going to get this stuff because they can't touch the models I have for the classroom. So instead, I found a lot of online virtual models, and the students are doing fine. So the studies that have been done so far seem to indicate that as long as it's a good model and that the students are actually able to manipulate it, they're still learning. So just because it's not a physical concrete model doesn't mean it's not concrete. So the idea is they go from the concrete to the representational. Now the representational is what students usually do when they're sitting in the class. They're looking at you. So it's the picture of what's going on. And of course the abstract is the converting all of that into mathematical symbols and equations and solving it. So the idea is if you can go from the manipulative and then you can go to the pictures, the image they have in their mind of what's happening, then they'll be better able to represent it symbolically, all right? Now, this last thing at the bottom is actually for me, probably the most important. Many students have very, very poor, what I'd call spatial reasoning or spatial intelligence. And it turns out that it is gender correlated, but it is not genetic, all right? Studies have shown over and over again, it is not genetic. It is apparently the way that we are raising women, all right? Women grow up with less spatial understanding than boys do on average. And this goes across many, many cultures. This isn't just in the United States.
But the idea is, can we train them? And the answer is yes. In fact, if they go through some of this spatial reasoning and spatial intelligence training, they're just as good as the men. But apparently, whatever we're doing, we're not getting that concept across as well as we should. And since I personally would like to increase the numbers of women and other minorities in mathematics, I think this is something that we need to overcome and something we have to address. All right. And from a personal note, I know that this is true because I was one of these students. All right. I did calculus when I was 17 and I was great at it, right? Made A's and had no clue what I was doing. I didn't get it. I didn't understand what a volume of revolution was. I couldn't picture it in my mind. I didn't see it. And some of my friends who happened to mostly be guys, because that's who was in my class, were like, can't you just see it? And I'm like, no. And they couldn't help me. They couldn't help me figure out how to see it. And it wasn't until I got older in my mid to late 20s that my spatial reasoning began to develop more and more. And suddenly it was like a light bulb went on and I was like, oh, that's what they're doing. But I couldn't see it at first. So I know that I have students in my class who are making A's and getting the answers right and still don't know what they're doing. And that's a problem because then they cannot apply it. They can't go to their job and actually solve problems because they really didn't understand the concept at all. Right. So what I want to do mostly today is I just want to kind of share with you some of what I do in my class. I call it Let's Play. All right. So my students are like, oh, it's a play day. Okay. So I do take a Nerf gun. This is how I teach that epsilon delta definition of a limit. All right. So because my students didn't get it, they're hard, right? It's a difficult, very theoretical, abstract concept. I was like, okay. I finally one day said, this is horseshoes and hand grenades. And I got, oh, okay. And then I thought, oh, hang on, Battleship. Let's play Battleship. So what I did was I took some cardstock I had in my office and I literally cut out an A and an L and a plus delta and a minus delta and a plus epsilon and a minus epsilon. I took them all outside. And I got my Nerf gun and I said, okay, you don't get to pick L and you don't get to pick the gun. That's the function. And you don't get to pick A and you don't get to pick epsilon either because I'm going to set them all. Your job is to find the delta so that when I fire the gun, it lands within epsilon of L. And I explained that I was the destroyer and I was chasing down the battleship. And it was mostly in linear because I'm chasing him. I'm going straight after him. So even though it's on the ocean, we can almost consider it to be like a 1D thing. And I'm chasing him. And L is the center of the battleship. And L plus epsilon is the front. And L minus epsilon is the back. And I explained that if I fired and went too far, it would go over the front. And it would go in the water. It wouldn't sink it. And if I missed and it fell too short, it would go in the water and wouldn't sink it. And they discovered very quickly that the delta wasn't always the same on both sides. Now, I will still say that they have difficulty writing up the proofs, but I've never again had a student who didn't understand the proof. They know what they're doing. They have a concept. They have a clear image in their head of what it is an epsilon delta proof is trying to prove. And they have a very good understanding of why it works, which I was very happy about that. So I still do it. And they really like it because I'm a terrible shot. And so they have a lot of fun with that. So that's one of the ones that I have been doing for probably, oh, I don't know, almost 10 years now. So it's a good one. It's not high tech, but they get it. All right. So that's one of my favorites. But I have others, all right? So I have a lot of other ones that I came up with. The solids by cross section. Oh my gosh, we get to that volumes of revolution and it's like their brains are just fried. They couldn't get it.
And I had so much sympathy because I remember not getting it. I just did every problem in the textbook and memorized how to set up every type, but I didn't see it and I didn't understand it. I really couldn't do it, if that makes sense to everybody. So then what I decided to do was I thought, well, I can build some of these, right? So I actually went to Target and I bought one of those poster board presentation things. So I bought a poster board presentation. It's made out of white foam. So if you're looking at it, right, it's just plain old white foam. And with my husband's help, because his hands are steadier than mine, we cut them up. All right, so this one is a circular base and the cross sections are all squares, all right? And we put them together with double-sided tape so that we could pull them apart and I could put them back together. When I passed it around the classroom, I got all of these, oh, I mean, it was almost funny. And this was a recent one. I only did this like a year and a half ago. And the looks on their faces, it was amazing. They didn't see it before that. It was clear, even with the pictures in the textbook, they didn't see it, all right? So I built some others. This one has a parabolic base and the cross sections are also squares on both sides. So this one was kind of good. And then I could pass it around. I could put them in groups and I could ask them to start trying to calculate it. And then I could vary the number of cross sections that I took, the number of slices, and I could change it. And then I pointed out that I could actually make these cross sections out of anything. So this one is a right triangle, but the cross sections are all semicircles, right? Now, they still struggle setting up the equations, but they don't struggle anymore understanding what it looks like. And the real problem is if you don't know what it looks like, how can you set up the equation? It's super, super hard. So I found that the solids by cross section are almost worse, harder for the students to visualize than are the volumes of revolution. And this one is both genders. I have as many male students who struggle with solids by cross section as I do by revolution. Now, when I get to the volumes of revolution, the weird thing is in most classes, many of the males get it right away. And I wonder if this has to do with some of the sports or games they're engaged in at a young age that's teaching them something that some of the females are just not picking up. I don't know. It is not genetic. They've shown that you can train women to be just as good at it as men. But apparently we're missing something in those early years getting them to see it. So volumes of revolution is also a good one that I like to do. I don't even know if I have it up here. Oh yeah. I like to play what's that volume of revolution. So this was a really tough one at first. Because I was trying to, it was like, okay, what could I do? You know, I bought some of these, you know, your styrofoam disc, and I brought it in the classroom and I tried to get them to line up on the board and I held it up there and they kind of got it. It was better. They could at least go, oh, it's a disc. That's a disc. Oh, okay. So I got that. I started calling them coins. That helped a lot. Because I was like, it's like a quarter, and here's that, you know, ribbed edge. And then they got a little better. But what really helped, at least for volumes of revolution, was when I was at, I think it was either Michael's or Hobby Lobby, or I don't even know why I was there. But anyway, I walked past, and they were, you know, doing a clearance, and they had all these wedding bells. This is where the wedding bells came from. They had all these wedding bell decorations on clearance. And I don't know, just a light bulb went off in my head and I was like, oh, I could use that. So I took a bunch of them and I cut them up and I used some of them to demonstrate what happens when you take that disc as a rectangle and you revolve it. So now we play, what's that volume of revolution? So I'll sometimes copy off the shape on a sheet of paper and they have access to it. And then their job is to try to describe and tell me what it looks like. So what I'm talking about is I'm talking about these guys, right? So when you fold them out, it is your volume of revolution, all right? It is a volume of revolution. And all of a sudden it connected to them that this is what I was doing, because I could have, I actually cut some of the big wedding bells in the shape of some functions. And then I would draw the function on the board, and then I would rotate the actual picture till it got all the way around. Lots of light bulbs started going off. And they're so cheap, especially certain times of the year, that, you know, I got different shapes and I could pass them around and different groups could work on different ones. And my favorite one, I suppose, at the moment would probably be this guy. He's pretty big. So here, I'll put him in front of me so you can definitely see on the background what it looks like. This one stumps them. I mean, there's not very many students that pick this one up. They're like, I don't know, that's nothing. You know, they're like, a cockatoo? You know, they're not getting it. So it's pineapple, right? So once, and it's fun for them. But the other thing that I'm doing is I'm training those students who are weak in this visual and spatial representation to learn how to look at this and predict, I guess I need to hold it the right way, this. All right, to look at this and predict this. So, and then we talk about how to hand draw it and do some things like that so that it looks a little more 3D. And I do have some 3D resources, which we'll be looking at in a second. So other ideas that I've come up with over the years, yes, I stopped just telling them what to do with the open top box for maximization of volume. And I started making them figure it out on their own, right? So I mean, especially right now, I've got, you know, like tons of boxes because we don't go anywhere and everything arrives by mail delivery. So I've got loads of cardboard, although I used to have to steal it before the custodians carted it all away. I was constantly pulling stuff out of the trash. But anyway, I have the students cut out and I'll assign different groups. They'll start with the same size cardboard. Different groups will cut out different size squares from the corner. And then I have peas. Peas work well, don't use marbles. They go all over the floor, but peas don't roll. So I'll use like beans type peas and they fill them up and see which one holds the most volume. And the idea is to get them to actually see what's happening. What is that shape? But again, I'm training visual spatialization while I'm doing it. I also use centroids. Now this is a fun one in class. And I always carry with me nowadays a shoestring. So it's in my bag along with my dry erase markers. And I, you know, I'm not that high tech. I mean, that's kind of the sort of the theme of today's talk, which is if you're not that high tech, how do you attach it? Binder clips are super strong, right? So they will attach and you can do a binder clip. And then, you know, you're like, well, I don't have a plumb bob. Well, you don't need one. I've used my shoe on occasion, just, you know, or my bag of markers or whatever. The main thing is you want to start with something that is uniformly dense, but don't start with something that's a circle or a rectangle. Make it like this. It's such a weird shape. How do you know where the center of mass is? How do you know where the center of gravity is? And we go through and we talk about how to do that. And they appreciate the fact that it's not regular. And they kind of try and see if they can eyeball. They'll take guesses. It's metal. Plastic works great too, because they're not super heavy. And you can write on it with your dry erase marker and then you can erase it after class, right? Because it'll rub right off. All right. So that's one of the ones I like. And let's see, what else did I have up here that I wanted to mention? Oh yeah, the isosceles triangle. Yeah. My students, the volume, you can tell volume's a big one in Cal 2. They'd never got this guy until I started showing them this and explaining that, you know, this end is the isosceles triangle and it's full of water, but this is the surface of the water. And again, these are just foam squares. They're not, it's not high tech. This is just a box. It was trash and now it's treasure, right? So it doesn't have to be. And like I said, I have done some stuff from Cal 3 as well. One of the best ones I did in Cal 3 was the line integral, because my students didn't get it. You can tell. You're looking at them and they're nodding. Yeah, we get it. And you're like, no, you don't. You're clueless and you want out of here, but you're not going. So then I said, okay, yeah, more cardboard. I just took a half of a parabola and I said, okay.
Johanna, may I disrupt
yes.
your presentation? There is a comment, there are a couple of comments here. They're saying that if you stop sharing, then they can see the objects that you are sharing, they can see those better.
Oh, see them better. Okay, yeah, I can do that.
Right.
Let's see. I'll stop the share.
Actually, you can enlarge okay. for a video.
Yeah, this is better. All right, so I took this and I drew a parabola, I cut a hole and I put it down and I said, okay, this is the XY plane. And then I said, you've got a plane above it and you're gonna drop a curtain down. And they're both the same parabolic shape, right? Both the same parabola. And your line integral is the area of the curtain. And I swear half the class, their head went, oh. I mean, all their heads went back. It was like light bulb went off, all right? Same kind of thing, trying to explain what is simply connected. You know, I thought, I'm never going to get a sphere. I do have a foam sphere, but I'm never going to get the hole to go through it without destroying it. And then I realized I already had one. It's my dog's Kong ball, right? That you put the little treats in. So it's perfect for that, all right? So again, the point is you don't need super expensive stuff to show what it is you need to do. For a cycloid, hula hoops are great because then you can create your own, like going around in a circle, right? You can create your own little thing. And I use one of these with a marker on this side and a student will hold the hula hoop. And then I can go around and they begin to see the patterns that repeat. And how if I change the location, it changes the pattern. So these are just some of the ideas that I've come up with. I would say that they come from everywhere and anywhere. And they started with the swimming pool problem from Calculus 1 that my students couldn't get. Because it was supposed to be a box, a rectangular parallelepiped, you guys know what I mean, on top, and a right triangular prism on the bottom. And I kept drawing it, and they couldn't get it. And so they couldn't do the problem. It wasn't that they didn't have the calculus. They couldn't see it. So I went back to my office, duct tape, cardboard, came back the next day, and all of a sudden, it ceased to be a problem. All right. So the other thing that I want to show you and share with you today, if I can find my controls for it, let's see. All right, there they are. All right. So the next thing that I want to share is a resource called CalcPlot 3D. I don't know how many of you are familiar with it. They recently did add on an ability to do surface area and also to do volumes by revolution and by washers. So I don't know how many of you guys are familiar with it, but I'm gonna try to get it to come over. It's always a challenge with three monitors to get it to cooperate. Okay, here we go. And nope, that didn't do it. Nope, still, sorry. Hang on while I try to convince it that it really wants to go. Is it over here? Okay. So, there it is. Okay. So hopefully you can see this now. I started using it a little bit and then a little bit more and a little bit more. And now I don't want to teach without it. I really don't. All right. Now, this one is for a volume of revolution. So this is more of a calculus two level. In Cal 3, I don't think I could teach Cal 3 anymore without it. I really don't. It can do anything I need it to do in Cal 3. But it's also now useful in Cal 2 for me. They have added something down at the bottom called a surface of revolution. And what they've done is they've given you the ability to specify the two graphs in the plane, but to also specify the limits of integration. And by specifying the limits of integration and the axis of revolution, you can get both disks and washers and shells in one program, all right? And you can also just take one representative triangle and you can pick where you want it and you can rotate it around until you can see it. And if I take off the entire shape, you'll see it. But you can also see in the background the two graphs that they're coming from. And then you can grab the picture and you can rotate it. So they can see it from all directions. And if you want to, you can make it transparent so that they can see it as well, all right? So, and CalPlot 3D was created by somebody at a community college, Monroe Community College, and so it's free, right? It's free, it was an NSF-funded grant, and the thing I like about it the most, well, two things. I can tell it to create a URL specific to that picture right there. And I can put it in my students' notes or right now in the chat window when I'm teaching class, and they click on it and it opens here. All right, so that is super handy. And the second thing is it has a very robust help part and it explains how to do stuff. It gives suggestions and it gives examples. So it gives me ideas on how I can use it in the classroom, which is also super nice. All right. So I highly recommend CalPlot 3D. It's one of my faves.
Now, Donna, can I interrupt with a couple questions?
Yes.
We're just getting, I put a quick link in the chat to the main Calc 3 plot or Calc 3D plot, but could you show a little bit more how you accessed the axis of revolution and the rotation? Yes,
I can. And I do want to warn you that there are two websites for CalPlot 3D.
I may have shared the wrong one.
And that could be. So I have a version one and a version two. And the links that I give in my PowerPoint are to the one that you need to do that one. In fact, I tried to make redo them all in the most recent version. I don't know why they didn't just update the website, but if you click on where it says select, where it says Johanna. Add to graph,
uh-huh. Johanna, there is a request for you to share your screen, please.
Share the screen? Okay, yes, let's see if you. I can do it. let me find it. I've got to find my Zoom controls again. They seem to have gone AWOL. Where are my Zoom controls?
They're above your screen.
They're not showing.
Just move your cursor.
Oh, there it is. Okay. They're hiding behind the PowerPoint.
Yes.
Things. Okay. So let me share. You want me to share the calc plot screen, I'm guessing.
Yes.
Yes, okay. Please.
There we go. Okay. So can you see it now? All right. So I have it bookmarked two ways because I didn't find the second one till later in the semester. But one of the things that I like the most about this is you go over here to where it says select. And when you click on select, you get a drop down menu. Now it was created for Calculus 3, it was. But I have still used it in Calculus 1 and I have used it in Calculus 2. And this new thing that they added is specifically Calculus 2. And so the one you're looking for the volume of revolution, it says surface of revolution. So you click on that and it's going to open up this drop down menu here. And then you do whatever's on top, whatever's on bottom, the boxes right here for the limits of integration. This is the axis of revolution. You do have the option to also switch and to do it as a function of Y as well. All right. Now, there are some things to note. The number of layers and slices, because it's actually approximating, if you increase those, it will slow it down a little, but it increases the revolution or resolution. And when you click on this gear symbol, if you tell it to be more transparent, it will become more transparent. And you can see on the other side of your 3D object. If you tell it to do a wireframe, you'll only get a wireframe. And let me show you what that looks like over here. I'm going to rotate the whole thing again. All right. And now I'm going to come out here and I'm going to tell it, let's see. I do it right there. Maybe if I change it, sometimes it gets a little confused and you have to kind of give it a second to figure out what you're doing. And I have found that the hitting enter works better than the other. And it will get more transparent so that you can see through it and see to the other side. And you can control how much you see through. So you can see the disk through the 3D object, which for some students is very helpful. All right. And also the ability to take it off and just look at the wireframe is helpful. So this has been a super big help for me. And of course, if you change limits of integration, what you're revolving around, it'll do any of the three, the disk, the washer, and the shell, all right? So it's probably my current favorite toy, I guess, my current favorite manipulative. And I have found that students need more guidance in using it than I thought they would. They're not as tech savvy as I thought they would be. But again, it does have a very robust help manual, and that helped. So I think we should probably, are we running close on time, Bernard? Should we go to the breakout rooms and give people a chance to discuss ways that they could use some more manipulatives?
Sure, we can.
Okay, so I'm gonna put you, or Bernard is gonna put you into some breakout rooms. And I'd just like you to chat for just a few minutes about what could you use an everyday object to model and what would you use? How would you do it?
Is it 5 minutes?
Yeah, we can do, let's do 3 minutes, three or four.
Okay.
I came back.
You came back.
I didn't know if Johanna was still going to stay in the main session or looks like she went into the breakout rooms too.
Yeah, it looks like it. Yeah. Oh, it seems that I got more people in. I have 5 rooms. Oops.
It's kind of counterintuitive, right? When you make the rooms, you have to... So it made 5 rooms that have lots of people probably, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Given 30. I think she said 5 people. I got 30 people. Oh, well.
Did we get the full time?
Yeah, we didn't get enough time.
Oh, you didn't?
No.
What happened?
That was too short.
That was like a
what
minute.
Happened?
Yeah, that was way too short to get going. Yes.
And there were like a lot of people in them.
Hold on. This is terrible.
talk.
We spent more time mulling over the short time we had.
Yeah.
Okay, hold on. Okay. It's not asking me for how much time. I thought I said it.
It was still only a minute that time, and nobody in my group talked.
Really?
Yeah, which is okay. But everybody else is going to be back in about 20 seconds, I think.
It never gave me the option to set the time. I don't know what.
Oh. Huh. I don't know. Yeah, I went to a different group this time.
Oh.
But Naj, you need to give us more time.
Oh. Are we back here? I'm confused. Me.
Breakout room. I got it.
That was just a little better.
Yeah.
You all have to pardon me. This is the first time I'm doing this. So.
Yeah, so what you probably want to do is just set them up and then you...
Should be better now. George, you're not going to a breakout room?
I don't know. Are you not sending me to one?
I'm not. Okay, let me see. Let me find George. Oh, let me assign George to room 11. There you go.
Sorry, my group didn't want to talk again.
So you're kidding me.
It's not your fault this time. Nobody was talking, so. It's fine. I'll just talk to you.
Yeah.
There we go. I know when I was on the meeting last week, they made mention of the fact that if you were in a group that nobody was talking, don't just stay there in silence. Like, come back to the main room.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
No. Now we know the plight of our students, right?
Yes, exactly.
When they don't want to talk.
Yes, yes, they're, yeah, or when they're like, I don't know, do you do breakout rooms at all?
No, I don't.
Okay.
We don't use Zoom, we use WebEx, and
yeah.
I do breakout rooms because, I mean, even when they're with me, they hardly talk. So I have to get things out of the throat, please talk with me.
Yeah.
So really, they come in there for review. They want to, you know, this is a fully online class. They want to see what I have to say. So what I've started doing, I ask them questions and I ask them to put the answer in the chat box. So this
way, okay.
You know, so, there is some kind of interaction. But yeah, I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm teaching all asynchronous this semester. So for me, it's like, sometimes they get on for office hours and then they talk a bunch, but I'm going to be teaching synchronous for the first time in the spring. And so that'll be,
yeah.
I think I'm going to probably do, I've heard that the breakout rooms, they're more likely to talk. So I'm hoping.
Really?
That, yeah. Cause there's only a few of them, but I was going to say when she was showing all the manipulatives, I remembered I have this, it's one of those where it like balances like on the beak.
That is neat.
That's
yeah.
Cool.
So I always throw that one in when I talk about something.
I love that.
Yes. Oh, is everybody else back now?
No, not quite.
I heard somebody else.
Oh, there's a couple. George is here and Robert is there. So which school you teach at, Catherine?
I'm at the University of Akron in Ohio.
Oh, in Ohio. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Awesome.
I've struggled with the breakout rooms. Very, very limited participation, and like in a group of four, maybe I'll get one that'll communicate. The others, they don't have their cameras up, and it's I don't even know if they're there. If I ask them a question, it's just complete silence. Sometimes I've really struggled with it a little bit this semester.
Really, that's interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's just the group. Maybe it's the, I don't know if it's the group this semester or what.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, some of them, even in a classroom, you know, you go from one class to another, some they are very talkative, some they are just, they just don't want to talk with you.
Right. Yeah, I'm curious, the class I'm teaching in the spring is education majors, so I'm not sure whether it's like more or less engaged.
More.
They're going to be talkative. They're going to be talkative. I'm
hoping. Yeah.
That should be a fun group.
Yeah, those are really fun.
I've got engineers this semester, so we'll see how things change.
I think everybody are coming up. I think I gave them enough time, hopefully, this time. Yeah.
It was four. It was better.
Yeah.
That was better, Baynaz.
You're getting better, Baynaz.
No, I finally did it, right?
Yes, this time is better.
Please, you have to give me credit. This is the very first time I have done that. So.
Yeah, we made some progress this time.
Good job.
So, Baynaz, you're not using Zoom in your classes?
No, we are not allowed to use Zoom, no.
Oh wow!
That'd be awful.
Yeah. So how do you teach without Zoom?
Well, we use WebEx.
Oh.
We use WebEx, and I do not use breakout rooms. And in fact, hardly anyone uses breakout rooms. So we just students come in there as a group. And I mean, it's not a large group when they come in. Maybe 10 of them. Maybe 1/3 of the class will turn up. So. So you have a story to tell tonight to your folks that there was someone there, a host of the Zoom, did not know how to.
Well, it just shows that we humans, and we are learning every day. Even I teach two classes in a row. I told the student that I learned something from my 8 o'clock class. I'm not going to repeat my mistake.
I know it. So I wonder where Johanna is. Do you think she's back?
She got lost in the cyberspace.
She got lost. So then she says, well, you all just conduct the session yourselves, huh? What do you think?
You muted me for some reason. Okay, I'm here. I'm ready.
Oh, yes,
there she is.
Okay. So, sorry about that. Yeah, I don't know why it did that again. But okay, so just a couple of last minute things. I didn't come up with all these. Like Harvard University is kind of doing the same thing. They use Kinect kits to create like a three-dimensional frame for the X, Y, and Z axis. I thought that was a great idea, but I think you could also use straws and Play-Doh. So your origin might be a little bigger, but I think it would work. And then, you know, you can use a hard, clear plastic shell of any shape to let them practice drawing contour lines. I'm gonna have my students start experimenting with cones. I do have like a foam cone shape so that, you know, students can play around so that they understand they got to use similar triangles to solve those work problems that are in Cal 2. So I do have some other of that kind of stuff. But one of the things I wanted to do for you guys was kind of at least curate some of this stuff because there's a lot.
So I went ahead and looked at some of the, if I can get my mouse to show up in the right location, maybe I can, maybe I can't. We'll see if it will go. All right, I'll just touch it and see if that works. Okay, there we go. So I have two pages of Calculus One links. The draw the derivative is super good. I really like this one. And then Larry Green has a couple for draw the derivative or draw the antiderivative. Cal One students struggle with this. This is hard. Given a function, draw the derivative, you know, that's tough. UC Boulder has some really good ones that will link position, velocity, and acceleration above each other. So that one's kind of nice. That one's over here. Related rates, there's an integrated math site that also does a really nice job with that. There are other things as well on page 2 for Cal 1. I've got a ton for Riemann sums. I mean, there's lots of good ones for Riemann sums. Area between curves, if you're doing conic sections in Cal 1, these are some of the ones that I like to at least show students. And then I've got, I think, 3 pages for Cal 2. There's even stuff from the Taylor and McLaurin series and the binomial series, which I thought was kind of surprising. I used these from Desmos to get across the idea of partial sums. So that's one of the things that I use it for. And then these are the ones that I showed you out of Calc Plot 3D. But there are other places where you can do volumes of different kinds of solids. Tim Brzezinski is at Desmos, and his stuff is really good. So when I see his name, I'll often click on it just to see what he did. And then I've got another page, Center of Mass, Discrete Objects, Work with Springs, more of the conic section stuff. And then I've got a page for Cal 3. There's lots of stuff out there. It's just a matter of going out and finding it and being willing to try it and it not work and reworking it and trying it again. So that's all I have. If you guys had questions or something, I'm happy to answer whatever we've got time for.
Can we have a list of these links, please?
Yes, I posted my PowerPoint presentation on my Amatic this morning, so it's out there. You can download it, and it has all the links in it.
Thank you.
Yep.
I'm just curious, when you're trying something new with your students, do you tell them this is new and it may or may not work?
Oh, yes. I do. And they kind of laugh because I'm kind of, you know, I'll grab anything. In fact, in class the other day, I was trying to get across the idea of simply connected. And I was like, I need a string. And I didn't have a string. And I'm looking around and I grabbed a computer wire. And actually, it works way better than a string. And so I'll keep using the computer wire. So I think they like it too, because I'm kind of modeling that I'm willing to look at it from a different viewpoint and approaching problem solving from what do I have that I can use, which I think is what engineers should be doing. So, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so very much, Johanna. That was
Thank you.
A wonderful presentation.
Good. And I will see if I can figure out how to get all these windows closed up. Okay, there we go.
Well, thank you so much.
Sure. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Stay safe and well.
This is great. Thank you so much. You.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Great
thank
ideas. You.
Thanks. Learned a lot.
Oh, good.
Awesome. Thank you, Joanna.
Yep. Thanks, Banaz.
Thank you.
Thank you, Joanna. Thank you, Banaz.
Thank you, everyone. Someone's asking about the happy hour trivia link. I haven't noticed.
I posted it there.
Perfect.
Yeah.
It's there. Okay, good. Thank you.
Okay. Absolutely. It's just a matter of them scrolling up.
Oh, okay, good.
Yeah. I scrolled up and I found it. We'll see.
Yay. Okay.
Good. Good, Gary.
I know it's challenging in the chat when there's so much happening, right?
I know it.
Everyone says thank you all at once and it just goes.
Exactly. Yep.
Awesome. Well, that's wonderful. Thank you so much, Shannon, for your collaboration today.
Oh, yes. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah, we had so much fun today.
Well, yeah, what a great day. I love being able to see who's here. That's really meaningful today versus last Friday. So
I know. Yeah. Yeah. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
So I guess our speaker has left. So it's time for us to leave, for everyone to go to the.
Okay.
Happy
Sounds
hour.
Good.
You go take care. Bye bye.
All right. Thanks, Benaz.
Bye bye.